I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast. The day we've all been waiting for, the Saturday, huge high mountain stage in the Tour de France Femmes Avec Zwift. It's like the decider, and the race has bubbled along, but honestly, we haven't really had much of a stoush between Vollering and ABV yet. And today we're going to be delivered with, today we were delivered that in earnest. We'll also quickly recap Classico San Sebastian, which was before this race, which finished at like, started at 4:30 and finished at 7:20, which is crazy. But yeah, big stage, Benji. Do you reckon they, was it too backloaded? Maybe that's a debate for later.
Looking at the differences after the stage without spoiling what happened, I think it's good that it's backloaded, because otherwise GC might have been a, might have been washed up already a few days in advance before the final. So I don't have an issue with that. But it's a stage that shouts, eh? The mythical Tourmalet after Aspin is like the run-in climb, but one would expect, okay, can Aspin already deliver action? Because Van Vleuten might actually launch on Col d'Aspin. Or will we see a breakaway with some dangerous riders before Col d'Aspin already? But it was a relatively attacking start, but controlled start, I would say.
Yeah, because you've got... You do have 50Ks or an hour and 15 minutes of flat before Col d'Aspin, which would take the riders 35 to 40 minutes at 6.5% average. And then, yeah, that valley, there's a pretty long valley before the Tourmalet proper starts, because the climb categorization starts when it's still false flat uphill for 3-4 kilometers at 2 to 3%. It's really the last 13Ks of maybe even less, 11Ks of Tourmalet that are super hard, with like, it averages 9% for the last 10Ks. It's super hard this side from Saint-Marie de Campan to over 2,000 meters. So, like, could Movistar, realistically, could a team get a rider in a break, get them over Aspin to help in that valley, Benji, ahead? It seems unlikely, because the sort of rider you're thinking about is like Gutierrez or Majerus. Yeah. It's just not plausible.
Exactly. And we saw that action a bit at the start of the stage with Movistar riders trying to slip in moves and other riders trying to slip in moves. But it was kind of a two-women breakaway again before we got to Aspin, because there's so many riders trying to attack that at a certain point they're like, okay, we've attacked 100 times now, this ain't going to work. And it kind of becomes like a pact of, okay, there's now two riders ahead, we're going to just ride a bit in the peloton behind. All the teams kind of trying to keep themselves at the front. It wasn't necessarily one team purely taking it on before Aspin, but we hit Aspin basically without a breakaway, I would argue, because we saw the peloton storming towards the bottom of Aspin, and the team that took it up from the bottom was a team I wasn't necessarily expecting to take it up from the bottom, because we saw Pfeiffer Georgie launching the first kilometer of Aspin with Labou in the wheel. And I found that extremely curious, because I was expecting Labou to be kind of the try and attempt to survive in the background of the big riders kind of stage for her. But they showed initiative on the first climb, and I wonder, can that bite them towards a later phase? Who knows? Sitting in second wheel is probably the same as sitting in fourth and fifth wheel at that point. But I would say that the back of the peloton was definitely wide open. Riders were dropping, but this was the gruppetto dropping, right? These were the riders that weren't necessarily expected to be there on the Tourmalet.
Yeah, when Pepperkamp was pacing, I think she took over from Pfeiffer Georgie for a little bit. You know, it's still a big group. And as you said, like, the gruppetto forms, I'm sure Luke will be on gruppetto cam watch whilst we're recording this, because the time limit's pretty tight. It's 35 minutes. And the Movistar riders, Mackay and Norsgaard, got dropped out of the gruppetto on Aspin. So I was like, that's going to be difficult to make it for tomorrow. I mean, it's the TT, doesn't matter. But
the GC riders helped a tiny bit with making sure that during the stage, riders could take time on them again. But we'll get to that point of the race. And we get 2 kilometers later on that climb. DSM had done their work, and we see Movistar at the front. And then Movistar hits the front, my immediate thought process goes towards, they're going to try and launch Van Vleuten here. Because usually when Movistar comes to the front, it's not because they're gently going to try and hurt the competitors, you know? It's not like they put a rider at the front and just phase the climb with one or two riders, and then the next climb they launch. They're always launching on the climb that they tend to put their riders at the front of. And we see that with Bionic at the front. At the same time, we see three Movistar riders dropping off the back. Number 3, 4, and 6 of the team. I remember the numbers, but not the names. But Patino was in the wheel of Bionic, and we also had in the wheel of that Van Vleuten with Lippert also close by, just in case she was needed for that as well. But small thing about Lippert, I swear she was in a small crash earlier in the stage. I don't know where it was. But that Movistar tempo with Bionic, it's obviously not crazy, but it's enough to keep people dropping. But when Patino started taking over, I was like, okay, this is trying to take over a launch platform for Van Vleuten, because that was tempo, and especially when Lippert took over afterwards with 5 kilometers to go.
And Vollering was very comfortable in terms of, she was talking to Roycer, she didn't even go to Van Vleuten's wheel. She was like, I'ma just sit here. And so she was just sitting behind Roycer. She's like, I don't care, like, you're not going to drop me here. And it's interesting that Movistar went with this plan because, you know, AV got dropped on Covadonga. She was gifted, courtesy of SD Works, a GC lead before this stage. She doesn't have to attack. She does have to drop Capecchi. But there's a 50-second gap between her and Capecchi. You'd think naturally, just from an acceleration of the GC group in the final, she can pretty much make that up on the Tourmalet. There's no real need for her with 12 seconds ahead of Vollering to attack on Col d'Aspin well over, it's like an hour and 45 to the finish, maybe nearly 2 hours to the finish. And SD Works, no need Fisher Black, Majerus dropped, Cecchini Bredevol dropped, Royce is sitting in the group on Aspin, Capecchi defending her yellow jersey. They don't have, apart from Roycer later, really, but we never saw it, they don't really have a dedicated domestique to make the climb super hard and launch Vollering. So I think Movistar they really helped Vollering here. Really, really helped her because, the inevitable happens. Lippert launches ABV, she attacks. Cash and Uvidome straight in the wheel. And I was, her climbing last year was really, really good. And she looks, Uvidome looks super comfortable.
I fully agree there. But the most comfortable rider in that group at that moment was Vollering. The way she switched from 6th or 5th position all the way to the front, she passed a few riders, she closed a small gap and got to the wheel of basically Nivjadoma and even started riding next to her in the wheel of Van Vleuten. And when I saw that, I was like, Van Vleuten just made an attack to drop these people. She just tried to fully launch with her team to try and drop these riders. And that was the moment where I was like, okay, I don't see Van Vleuten winning this Tour de France one. That was the moment that did it already for me. And we're only on Aspin. And maybe SD Works didn't realize that yet based on the situation that follows. But we still see those three riders, having a bit of a gap there. Now, to come back on your point when it comes to Movistar's tactic, I think there is an argument that they probably thought that if they made the race as hard as possible, that Vollering's puncher qualities wouldn't overtake Van Vleuten, but they have to remember also that Vollering's a pretty good climber. Like,
she killed AVV on Covadonga.
So she's not the kind of like puncher like who can I say?
Daddy
a puncher
Pigaccia.
Like okay, I'm not gonna name a name. I'm not even gonna not accept the name you just threw into the table.
Why? But multiple climbs paced hard. See ya.
Anyway, from that point on, there were three riders up the road, those three riders, and it was an interesting dynamic in the group, right? Because we had Van Vleuten pacing the majority of the work, because she was probably still confident she could drop Vollering at that point. Vollering not doing anything in that group. Nivjadoma, pacing every now and then in the group. I think that is because she knew top three competitors behind me, if I help a little bit, then Van Vleuten might keep going and might not stop in the middle of this climb. And that way we can keep it up towards the top and I can keep gaining time on the people behind me. And I think that was actually a good strategy by Nivjadoma doing that.
And her pulls got progressively longer and more and a higher pace. The first pull, she rolled through 10 seconds straight off the front. AVV, you keep pacing. And I guess, like, Vollering doesn't have to pull. First of all, my default position is she's going to cook on Tourmalet. So no need to pull. She's got two teammates, by the way, in the group behind. It's poor old Juliet Labou pacing, doing the vast majority of the pacing on Aspin, with Reusser in the group, Capecchi in the group, Mulman, Cavalli, Ludwig, and I don't think I've missed anybody else. So Labou did a lot of time on the front. Mulman did do some relays. SD Works didn't pace at all. They don't have to. They're sitting in both groups in the wheels. It's the second last climb. AVV's got a pace. And I think, as you said, AVV, she said after the race, oh, I didn't expect to drop Vollering there. It was to make the race hard. But you could tell, like, if you looked at the two of them, and it is difficult because AVV always looks uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But, like, Vollering wasn't even breathing or sweating. And, like, she was closing anything in the saddle, just, like, bang, spin it up. So even the QOM sprint, we get to the top of Aspin. The gap's, what, 30-45 seconds?
Yeah.
It is a pedaling descent mostly. It's not the most technical descent. And then the valley and false flat of Tourmalet is quite heavy pedaling stuff. But even in that sprint, Vollering didn't contest it. Nivi Doma did. And AVV kind of looked a bit meh. And that was almost a mistake from Vollering, because if you had followed this race really closely, the wet descent, technical fast descent on stage two or three into the 3K 6% climb, two riders were by far the best descenders. Lippert and Nivi Doma bridged on the descent to Lippert, who was sending it. And so Nivi Doma is a really, really good descender, like well above average. Vollering, I would say, is fine. AVV, maybe a bit below average after all her crashes. And Nivi Doma just sends the descent, Benji. Maybe that was just her pace, but Vollering, I don't know if she could have stayed with Nivia Doma. I think she could have, but she had AVV in front of her and AVV just let the gap go.
I think Nivia Doma was a good descender. Just to let that be clear. A great descender. I don't know if Vollering could have followed that tempo. I don't know if she should have risked following that tempo as well. It's kind of a thing as well here, but when it comes to Van Vleuten, she just couldn't follow, like you said. But then the intriguing factor starts once the gap is there. Who of the two is going to close it? And I feel like Vollering showed some interest to keep on going once she went past Van Vleuten. She tried to keep going for a few corners. In a few corners, Van Vleuten was on her wheel. And once the descent kind of started evolving from the technical part to the very not technical straight road part, that's when you get the biggest problem when it comes to cooperation in that second group of two riders. And that was simply with them looking at each other. And at a certain point, Van Vleuten started breaking when Vollering didn't take over. Who was the worst non-cooperator in that duo, you would say?
Which I think is fine as well. Because just behind are two trucks, Reusser and Capecchi.
Yes.
Rouleurs who can smash this 10K section and the 3% false flat section. Why would she pull? Now that the gap's open, there's no need to just relay with the gap open, let your teammates come back. The problem with that was Reusser and Capecchi were in no rush to get over there. They were still sitting in the wheels whilst, you remember, like, Labou is like, I don't know, sub 50 kilos. Nivi Doma is also really small. Like, if Reusser and Capecchi get on the front and drive it, like, they will eat into a 30-second gap like it's nothing. And eventually Reusser does. It took a while. And the gap to Nivi Doma was 50 seconds at one point, or maybe 48 seconds, nearly a minute. And I was thinking, jeez, like, I know normally you have her number, but she showed in this race so far a really good level. And on Aspin, she was doing it easy. Are you comfortable giving her a minute? The answer was no. And so I don't think it's too bad from SD Works. The rulers came back. Maybe the word came down the chain a bit slowly for Reusser and Capecchi to get across there. But, you know, Reusser then going on the front to manage the gap, totally fine.
Exactly, the go-to move at that moment, once the gap started increasing by Nivia Doma, was indeed Capecchi and Reusser starting to work behind. It was Reusser that did it, because Capecchi, they were clearly trying to keep Capecchi defending her yellow jersey throughout the stage. And you saw that on every single climb. On the first climb, she was already not really looking after Vollering, looking after herself there, which I consider that a team strategy and not Capecchi being selfish at that point. Same when it comes to Reusser bringing that group back. And And that actually brings them back to Vollering and Van Vleuten. And then the gap was 40 seconds once they were caught. And I do think there was a Reusser pull with the help of a motorbike for a second that split the group for a bit, because Cavalli got dropped at like the bottom, the bottom of the Tourmalet. And that the first few kilometers of that Tourmalet, like the first few kilometers, the ones that are not the steep part yet, that's where Reusser is so super helpful.
Yeah.
That's where Reusser can really make that dent. And the gap that she made in that Nivea Doma gap was huge, because she brought it all the way down from 40 all the way down to, I'd say, 8 to 5 seconds, roughly.
Five or less. This is the problem for Nivea Doma. And I think, like Matilda Reynolds commented on the LICP yesterday, saying, bit of a hot take, saying Nivea Doma will ride conservatively. And she was right, because I was like, Kasia will sit in the wheels. And she went on a descent raid and drove the whole Tourmalet solo. But she's doing so many more watts than Van Vleuten and Vollering in the wheel of Reusser. Like, she's just getting mowed down. And I'm worried that she's going to completely blow up here. And when they zoomed in on her, it looked like she was just trying to hold 5 watts per kilo, I think, 250 yeah. watts. And she was just holding that the whole climb. So she wasn't blowing herself up, but it's just tough for her on 2 and 3%. But they didn't bring her back before 11Ks to go. And here's the problem then. The steep part starts, and she's now still doing 5 watts per kilo, but Royce is done. And so that gap goes from 5 seconds all the way out now, with Vollering not taking over, Capecchi not taking over, to like 45 seconds again. I was like, what is going on?
Because that second group, you've got Vollering and Capecchi, who Vollering's happy with Capecchi being in the group and that yellow jersey being still virtually among the shoulders of Capecchi at that point on the Tourmalet already. And it's really in the others' position to really attack for now at this point in the race. So I do feel like for the first 2 kilometers, while that gap was expanding to Nivea Doma, that we saw the following things. Ludwig pacing a tiny bit, Spratt dropping in the meanwhile, but then the gap kind of, well, it explodes again towards that group too, because Ludwig goes off the front and then Spratt comes back. And you saw that the tempo had these moments of like a tiny bit of movement, but then a long time of waiting because no one really takes over. And Labou once again was the one that worked the most, I would argue, in that
easily.
G2. Throughout this entire stage, she was pacing on the climbs. And I think that's her preferred style. Whether that's the best possible style to get the best possible result, I'm not necessarily certain. But Vollering was controlling attacks from Labou every second, because Labou thought to herself, maybe everybody will look at each other when I go, which worked at Giro d'Anne. But in this specific race, it didn't, because Vollering, she could have ridden 17 Tourmalets at this point, and she would still be fine when it comes to her fitness level, because she looked so good when she was controlling every single move. But if you looked at the back of the group, that yellow canary at the back, full canary mode, Lotte Kopecky, I love that, by the way, full on yellow, that's perfect. She was still there, and she kept staying there. But the more those moves by Labou happened, I felt like the more you saw Capecchi kind of shake left and right on the bike. So I think Capecchi was starting to suffer towards, let's say, 8 kilometers to go, 7 kilometers to go. But that's expected, eh?
Yeah, I think Capecchi from the base after Reusser pulled off should have just absolutely whacked it and done a lead out for Vollering. That's what I thought the whole time, mainly because I just wanted to see really what Vollering could do on this climb. I wanted to see some of the women's watts records get broken, but
yeah, but I don't think it's necessarily bad what they did instead.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine in the end, of course.
I think it does say that they weren't necessarily fully confident that Vollering could drop everybody with notable amount of time.
I think it says the opposite.
Really?
I think it says the opposite. They were just like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that Nivea Doma is at 40 seconds. It doesn't matter that because AVV is always going to drop Capecchi. There's no world in which AVV doesn't drop Capecchi.
Yeah.
And so if you're just happy with the status quo, and then you're going to ride to the last 2Ks, 1,500 meters, and then AVV drops Capecchi and eats into the 50-second gap, and she's going full gas and Vollering can't gain time,
then Capecchi's still there.
Well, no, now AVV's in yellow. Because AVV's always dropping Capecchi. In any situation, Capecchi is getting dropped by AVV on this climb. She's never riding to the finish with AVV. And so she's going to lose like her GC lead to AVV in any scenario. So It does mean ABB does have to attack at some point, but it means she can attack a lot later. She can attack at, you know, 1500. So what they basically just thought, well, it doesn't matter, because what ends up happening is, you know, Labu would pace for a bit. Vollering just launches at 5Ks to go off the various pacing. And within about 1 minute, maybe less, you saw ABV shook her head, like literally shook her head. Gap opens up and you know the race is over, because 5Ks to go, you're getting dropped. Then it's, you know, 2,000 meters, an hour long climb. See you later. And it's the fog of war has descended. We're in the fog. It's 7 o'clock at night.
I love it.
On the Tourmalet, through tunnels. We don't know the time gaps. We can't see any of the riders. And all you know is the specter of Demi Vollering is flying, and she like appears in the background of a moto shot in the mist behind Navi Doma. Terrifying.
Exactly. And I do have to, hands down, congratulate Kopecky for the performance she did on the climb. Yes, I'm Belgian, but I'm going to say it anyway. Like, the performance she did on this was something I don't think anyone predicted when it comes to how strong she was climbing, how she was able to follow on these climbs. And definitely based on like what we've seen in the past, she hasn't performed at this level on a climb before. On a long climb, she hasn't done that before. And this does open kind of possibilities for the future, I would argue. Can she win the Tour de France Femmes in the future? Who knows? If she would have been, let's say she started today's stage with 3 minutes ahead. And that is because, for example, in stage one or stage two, they pulled a Kopecky card in the same way you were saying on stage two. When you said, oh, they should try that again. Let's try and copy paste. Kopecky attacks his group and tries to get another minute or another 40 seconds. Then she actually could have been competitive for the Tour de France Femmes.
Yeah, which, for sure.
At that point, if she's 2 minutes ahead, she's probably going to get chased down a bit more. But I would say that she was really fucking strong here. And I think that what Vollering did when it comes to dropping Van Vleuten, that's just the confirmation of the torch being given around, eh? Because for so many years, we've had Annemiek van Vleuten at the top of the food chain, at the apex predator of the women's peloton when it comes to GC. And this is just a new apex predator. Demi Vollering is now the crown on top of the peloton when it comes to GC. And it's not even close, eh? And like, I was worried. I was worried before this race. Okay, what if this race is now closed? Vollering and Annemiek, they're closing GC at the end of the race. And afterwards, Van Vleuten retires, for example, because that's what's on the menu at the moment. I was worried, okay, there's not going to be competition. Well, that's the case, but there's currently no competition anyway.
Yeah, Vollering's the best rider in the world. She's just too good. Like, yeah. What she's done this year is incredible. And to be honest, apart from Royce of this race, she's done a lot of it on her own, frankly. In fact, she's had to be subservient in a lot of stages where she could have taken additional time to the ambitions of others in this race. And 5Ks to go, she finally, you know, unleashed what I thought she had. And yeah, she just, it was much more dominant than on Covadonga. Going past Navi Doma, dropping Navi Doma, and then the gaps just are exploding. The gap to Kopecky, the gap between Navi Doma, Van Vleuten, Moelman, Labou, Kopecky was pretty stable.
Yeah,
they all sort of kept their gaps to each other stable, but then the gap to Vollering just exploded and ended up being 1 minute 58 to Navi Doma. So Vollering did the climb, quick maths, at least 2.5 minutes quicker than Navi Doma, although she had the benefit of a draft for a lot of the time. She puts 2:34 into Van Vleuten, who parked. She actually only finished 9 seconds ahead of Moelman. Labou only 12 seconds behind Van Vleuten. So the three, Van Vleuten, Moelman, Labou, all within 12 seconds of each other, very close on a 1 hour plus climb. Kopecky finishes sixth on the stage on 3:32, then a big gap, 5:24, Saint Esteban, and then Cavalli and Ludwig together on 5:43. Bauernfeind, she got dropped early, but she finished on 7 minutes in 10th. The revised GC, Vollering basically ends the Tour de France Femmes. Avec Zwift today moves into the yellow jersey. She already had the nails painted yellow. There's the tell of the confidence. 1:50 ahead of Navi Doma, who's in second. And it could have been more. It could have been more. She did the climb the same time, basically, as Van Vleuten, but a lot more watts. So, you know, she put it on the line, could have won the stage, didn't end up happening. But yeah, Navi Doma, really, really impressive. Second to 1:50, Van Vleuten narrowly in third on 2:28. Kopecky drops to fourth, but she's only 7 seconds off the podium. So she still has the podium in play tomorrow in the TT, but I don't believe that... I don't believe anyone can overhaul Vollering, but Nyovyadoma will be trying to defend second and third, frankly, to the two behind her, and Van Vleuten will be trying to move up into second and hold off Kopecky.
Certainly, the podium fight will be on the menu and will be very, very interesting. I was obviously hoping GC would still be on the cards, but that's definitely not the case. Vollering has won Tour de France from, bar any accidents, bar any bad luck, and we don't hope that for a rider like that, because she was simply the best in this Tour de France form when it comes to... She's the best rider in the world. You said it. Let's say that. So she deserves that victory 100%. When it comes to the riders behind her, I honestly reckon that Kopecky could end up on the podium here. Her TTs... You can't look at the Belgian National Championships ITT. Like, whoever says, oh, she won the Belgian National Championships ITT a billion times, sorry, but the competition there just isn't on the level of these other riders. So you got to try and compare some performance at World Championships where she was not necessarily focusing on the ITT in the first place. But I reckon it's a possibility for Kopecky to be on the podium. I think Van Vleuten is likely going to be on there. So I feel like it's between Nyovyadoma and Kopecky for the third spot in GC when it comes to this Tour de France Femme. Now, were you disappointed in the climbing of Van Vleuten? Was it worse than you expected?
No, I thought Vollering would be better after Covadonga.
Yeah, that you expected, but was the difference as huge as you expected? Because were you expecting, for example, Van Vleuten to be so close ahead of Mormont?
If they had Niamh Fisher-Black here and Riolini was here, because if Riolini was here, she's got cojones. She's really small, but if Riolini was here and everyone was looking at each other, she would have just started driving it at the base of Tourmalet, I'll tell you that. And is she injured? I don't know. ELB had to leave the race this morning. She had a skin infection. But
yeah,
if Riolini or Fisher-Black were launching it, I think this gap could have been, because Vollering was doing under threshold for like 45 minutes during this climb. But yeah, was AVV, to your point, you know, her finishing, 7 seconds ahead of, 9 seconds ahead of Moorman on this climb? Yeah, probably. Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to look at the watts. Is she worse? Have the others improved? Yeah. To me, it looks like Nyovyadoma has improved.
Yeah, certainly.
I don't know. She said she didn't have her best day in the interview afterwards. So, but yeah, it's kind of a continuation of Covadonga. This is a much longer, harder climb with a difficult climb beforehand. And she also did all the big effort on Aspen. So she didn't, with Aspen and how she rode that in mind, you know, I'm not surprised that she cracked a little bit.
Do you see a new opponent coming up when Van Vleuten gone? Because Demi Vollering is the apex predator now, but who can take her out? Because if I look at the other riders in the peloton, Riolini can climb well, but she's got weaknesses on other terrain, and I feel like Demi Vollering is the most complete package by a very, very long mile. So, a very long kilometer. Okay, sorry. I need to stay within the metric system with all you imperial bullshit. But I think there's no one close at the moment. And even with the young talent coming up, Niedermayer and Barnfan, I'm curious where that will go. But that's nowhere near what Vollering is yet.
No. I think Elena Ivanchenko, but she's a couple of years away and might need to, depends what team she goes to. But yeah, she's someone I think could be there in 2, 3, 4 years, but not right now. Maybe Nyovyadoma. Like, she's only, 28? Like, she's still improving. And you see, you know, AVV won every race possible in her late 30s. So could it be Nyovyadoma just keeps improving? I mean, Kane and SRAM have improved so much this year that if they continue with that rate of improvement and Nyovyadoma rides a bit more conservatively, big if, then I don't know. The biggest threat to me with Vollering is her team, to be honest, because as I said, like, I know I appreciate Kopecky. It's great, you know, close on GC, but in the end, the simple answer is you have the best GC rider in the world. Just launch her and just ride for her GC and you win the race by 5 minutes and you don't need to do any complex things.
I would bet they now know that, though. I think this race confirms that to them 100% after there probably still being some doubt in the team. until today.
Yeah, but Capecchi will still come next year and want stages. And so will, if they didn't have Royster this year, poof, man, Royster was,
that's true.
Royster the MVP of that team this week, apart from Vollering. Like, well, she is, yeah.
She wins tomorrow.
Well, that's a good question. Let's preview tomorrow's stage. The TT, second, third, fourth, all up for grabs from Po to Po, 23 kilometers, a little bit rolly. There is a 1,400 meter, 7.4% climb. That's quite difficult. And then flat again, and then there's a final ramp of 600 meters, 4.6%. It is, how long will it take them? 27 minutes, 30 minutes?
Roughly, I would say.
Going to go with Vollering to win the TT and extend her
Ooh.
Gap.
Ooh, interesting. She's definitely a good time trialist. We've seen that before.
Yeah.
Whether she can beat Royster, which is the best active individual time trialist in the world, I don't see it.
True, Royce is, I forgot Royster and Marcus, but Marcus' shape looks bad because Marcus smoked her in the Netherlands Champs TT, but that was 42Ks and I think, I don't know, it must have been reasonably flat because it's in the Netherlands. Marcus' shape's not as good. And Vollering, so she beat Van Vleuten not by much in that TT. Over 53 minutes or 54 minutes, she beat AVV by 18 seconds. That's nothing. So it's not like I think the longer TT, though, 55 minutes suits AVV more. I don't know. You're right. Royster probably is the favorite, but I'm going to go with Vollering. I'll stick to my guns.
Why not? She's shown today that she's in good form. Let's just say that. She could have ridden 10 more Tourmalets and still finished with breath left. So that's a hell of a performance. I'm looking forward to the TT, regardless of the fact that GC is gone, as in the podium's still on, and I do want to see that fight. But yeah, that's kind of it for today's stage. Were there other things we can mention? I don't think so.
Well, who do you think? What do you think happens with the podium? What's your final podium?
Oh, I think it's Vollering. Should I stick to the Belgian guns? Vollering, Van Vleuten, Capecchi. I'm going
Vollering, Capecchi, Nuviodoma.
Ooh!
I think AVV falls off the podium.
Spicy, but I like it.
Yeah, but it'll be close. That's going to be a really close run thing. But I can't wait to watch that tomorrow. In terms of the other top 10, you know, Marcus is in 12th. She'll probably move into the top 10 tomorrow, I dare say, even though she's on 9:52. Like, she can really put a lot of time into the others. Ludwig against Sant Esteban. I think Labou will stay where she is. And I don't really know. Sprat Bauerfeind. I think Bauerfeind will stay where she is, maybe 9th, and Sprat could lose her 10th position to Marcus if she has a good TT. So, but otherwise, yeah, very exciting mountaintop finish. I would dare say epic with the fog. A lot of fans out, like in some of the last bends, it's 7:30 at night on top of the Tourmalet in the fog, and the fans are lining the bends. It was fantastic to see a lot of media there. Yeah. Really, really great. I enjoyed it.
I think we need to put fog machines on mountains because it makes it so much more epic. Sorry, but this was epic.
Not being able to see anything.
Not being able to see if the rider that is attacking dropped a rider or not, or whether someone will come out of the fog 10 meters behind the rider, whether the rider that, well, was it Labou that was almost catching Molman at a certain point, or Molman almost catching Van Vleuten on the climb?
Molman behind AV, yeah.
And I didn't know which rider was ahead, and then I thought, oh, who's ahead again? Oh, it's that rider. I found that epic. Sorry, but I enjoyed that.
It was great. But yeah, stay tuned for a recap of the TT tomorrow, but Vollering looking like the winner-elect of this edition of the Tour de France Femme avec Zwift. But speaking of races, which kind of felt like watching, because we had wall-to-wall coverage of this stage, a race that kind of felt like watching many of the women's races, Classica San Sebastian, today, Remco Evenepoel, world champion and last year's winner on the start list, 231Ks, very, very difficult. But the Erlites Heiskebel combination, so Remco launched on Erlites last year, 4Ks, 10.5%.
Yeah.
That was moved to 70Ks from the finish, and they put the Mendelsohn-Rotz 4Ks, 7.3% in between that and the Murgil Tontorra, which is 2.1Ks, 10%, about 9Ks from the finish. So the hardest climb in the race, now 70Ks, would Remco go there? Would coverage start in time? Because coverage, it started at 1500 on Eurosport GCN, but true degenerates know that in these Basque races, the EITB public Basque broadcaster always gets it half an hour earlier. And so I was watching half an hour earlier, and just as well, because 1 minute before live coverage started, Aerolites in the GC group was about to finish, and Remco attacked off Van Sevenant, and Van Sevenant pacing after Hilliard attacked. It was like he knew coverage was about to start. Despicable.
Not amused.
Yeah.
I didn't see the attack until the replay.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I didn't have the Basque broadcaster in my back pocket like you have. So yeah, I
didn't. You gotta know that one trick. That one trick. Podcasters don't want you to know. Yeah, true. Anyway, Remco goes clear. I'm thinking race over before anyone's even seen anything. Luckily, Vlasov, Bilbao, Bertiol bridge across him. There had been a breakaway ahead with Van Hooydonk and Bardet and Garcia Cortina. Van Hooydonk and Bardet survive. Group of Bilbao, Vlasov, Bertiol. Anybody else? Joined Bardet and Van Hooydonk. Yeah. Group behind is an absolute mess. Garcia Cortina starts attacking the group when he should be pacing for Aaron Beru, the guru. Maybe Van Hooydonk even should be dropping back to pace for Tejs Benoot, because what's he going to do in this group with Mendes Rots and Murgil Tontora to come? So him being in that group was kind of pointless.
Whether Van Hooydonk top 10s from that group or Benoot top 10s from the group behind, that's the max I believe that Jumbo could really achieve at this race. So yeah. I think at that point, you kind of have fun with the
really
situation
matter.
You have. Van Hooydonk's in that situation. He's fought for that situation. It's a situation that nobody would have expected before he was in that situation, him being in that group following, well, not Bardet dropped him a little bit, but he came back with the other riders and so forth. So that was a bloody good performance by Van Hooydonk. And his day wasn't done, because like the action continued and I thought, okay, where's the separation going to come? Because you said it, that Adelaide's attack, that Remco attack, that brought him to that group.
It's a weird attack.
After which he said it wasn't planned.
It's weird.
Maybe he didn't want to throw it all on the line. He wanted to see if he can get a group with him, and maybe that's why he didn't want to go all out.
Yeah, like, I think he kind of, actually, in his heart of hearts, on Adelaide's, was like, I should attack here. This is where he dropped everyone last year.
Yeah.
And on Redoux, drops everybody, or except Pidcock came back and then dropped him later. and usually when we see him launch like that, it's with full commitment. And you're right, this one, because it's not just Vlasov got across him. You know, Bertiol and Bao Bao weren't really in the picture, and they came across because, he said he was running out of teammates, but that wasn't really true either. Like, he had Van Sevenon and Bagioli there. I think they didn't want him to launch 70Ks from the finish, and in the end, it worked out for him because
his gut, I guess.
Well, yeah, like the others just worked with him, like fully worked with him. Because in San Sebastian, this race is literally like walls, steep wall climbs, and flat valley. And so the gaps just explode if there's a cooperative group versus a dysfunctional group. So just forget about group two, it's gone. Apart from Gull and Landa trying to bridge on the Mendes Rots climb. And I was then thinking, okay, is Remco going to drop them on the next climb? Is he going to drop them on Merkel Tontora? Is he going to attack again? Is he going to attack them on the flat? It's weird to say this, but Remco did look a lot less dominant than previous years in Liège and in this race itself.
I would agree. I don't know the numbers, so I can't confirm it. That was 100%,
yeah,
but
true.
I think how I saw that attack, how I saw that move was, okay, he wants to have riders with him in that move. Because if he goes solo from there, yes, he's done it before, but he probably wants more riders with him. Because that also means less teams chasing behind.
True.
In that process. But if you then go further into the race, when he tries to drop riders in that front group, he has the Van Hooydonks of the world drop. Those riders drop. Bardet drops, for example, who had been in the breakaway already for the majority of the race. But there's other riders, the ones that were bridging that weren't initially with his move. Like, for example, you said it, Vlasov and Bilbao. When they couldn't follow, when they could follow Remco on the majority of his accelerations in this race, I was like, ooh, in the Vuelta, that's not supposed to happen.
Or here, really, like, he just smashes people off the wheel on these ramps and it didn't happen. Now, maybe he was, you're right, does he want to do a 2-hour solo? Because EF are going to chase full gas behind. They got multiple riders. Yep. Bora will chase. Bahrain will chase. But now he's got them with them. And it's just Luchenko for Astana, and then he gives up, and Movistar, and they stop. So, yeah, you may be right. I mean, Bilbao looked really good. Looked really, really good. On Mendizorroz, he looked really, really good. And then on the descending, he's obviously very, very efficient. He's quite aerodynamic on the flat too. And we get to the Mergel Tontor, and nothing's happened except Berriol's been dropped. And Remco just does his pace, mashes, 2Ks, 10%, steeper ramps than that. Vlasov struggling, gone. But Bilbao comes back to the wheel. He's nose breathing. Bilbao also then surges past Remco. Remco takes personal offense to it, goes back to the front, starts whacking it hard on Mergel Tontora. And then the last 200 meters, the Basque commentators are going crazy. The fans are going crazy. You got race organizers' dream. World champion, defending champion of this race. Best Basque rider of the moment, who just won a Tour de France stage in 5th, 6th in GC, on his wheel. And they're glued together on Mergel Tontora. And then Benji, Bilbao, I'm sure, this was weird, right? Because Bilbao, in that Tour de France stage, he played it perfectly, right? He didn't close moves, yeah. He didn't have to. He closed the Zimmerman move that he had to. He timed his sprint well. He baited Zimmerman to launch too early. The way he rode this final, because like Remco's sprint is much improved. Bilbao's got a perfectly serviceable flat sprint too. Remco goes back to the front at 800 meters to go. Then the flat finish, Vlasov's gone. And I'm like, oh, Remco's fucked up here. He's going to have to lead this out. Because no way Bilbao will come through with less than a K to go. The gap to Vlasov's like a minute. The gap to G3 is 3 minutes. They don't have to pull. And Bilbao comes through again with like 450 meters to go.
I didn't get that. When that happened, I was like, okay, this is a lock for the victory. Because when it comes to their sprint, before the sprint started, I thought Evenepoel's sprint was better, but I think he would lose if he would sprint from the front. And the second that Remco was at the back of the two riders, I was like, okay, this is locked. Remco wins this.
Yeah.
Because Remco's improvement when it comes to sprint throughout the last 2 years has been from riding Colbrelli to the line in the European Championships in Italy that one time to now winning these sprints in groups. He's been so much better this year when it comes to his sprint. And his power is higher when it comes to his sprint. And when it comes to Bilbao, he's solid in larger group sprints, but he's also inconsistent every now and then. But I still believed Bilbao can still win if he's in second wheel.
Yeah.
And honestly thought whoever is at the front loses this sprint.
Yeah, because like Remco say he is 5% stronger. Well, if you're leading somebody out at 45 kilometers an hour, and then you start your sprint, and you've now racked it up to 55, 57 kilometers an hour, and he's in your draft, that's more than 5% benefit. I know they still have to come round you, but if Remco panics and jumps at 250 too early, and yeah, I was really surprised Bilbao played it like that, actually. He was quite...
Yeah.
He rode with Remco really generously. I was surprised, but listen, credit to him. And in the end, Remco wins this race, but in a very different way, winning a two-up sprint with Bilbao. Vlasov third on 28 seconds. Paulus broke away from the group behind to come fourth. Then Izagirre and Schoen's Aaron Brew, Costa, Bagioli, Benoit. So Ayuso, he crashed earlier in the week at another, I think, Basque race.
Yeah.
Like, looked really bad, actually. He couldn't move his left arm for a bit. And he was here. He struggled. So... yeah, I question the merits of that. Same with Rodriguez. Like, seeing Rodriguez here, like, he came... where did he come last year in this race? He was pretty good. He came fifth. But I feel like he was better than him, and Sivakov were actually, like, relevant in this race deeper. He looked bad today. Like, you can see his injuries, his face. So I was surprised those two young guys lined up with, you know, the Vuelta in mind for Ayuso. So, but anyway, Remco wins his third one, tying the record for San Sebastian. He in the all-white bibs, all on track. He's got the World Championships next road race next Sunday. So,
but
yeah, good.
No white bibs at the World Championships. Probably black bibs with the blue shirt, with the Belgian shirt. So will that hinder him winning a one-day race? Because I swear that the ones he won were all with white bibs in the last three ever since he became world champion. Now, does that white bibs benefit stop the second that he becomes non-world champion on the World Championships? Who knows? But honestly, at this point, if Remco shows up with white bibs at a race, I'm just terrified. It's like he can ride 100 watts more on a climb. It's so terrifying to see him in that side. And it also kind of, I feel like it draws more respect if you ride with white bibs with the world champions.
You're taking a risk. You're taking a big risk that there's no rain or mud on the road or whatever. So yeah, respect to that. But yeah, that was a fine. It was an okay race. Yes, it was fun.
Yeah, I agree. It was a fine race.
Not the best race I've ever seen.
The Tour de France fun was definitely a better stage today. And Polonia, quick word on Polonia. A lot of rider crashed with 8 kilometers to go. I have no clue who won, but I knew that Almeida was finishing 3 minutes later, for example, and some other riders 2 minutes later, Thomas and so forth. But I recall them changing the times to 0 seconds now. So
they put everyone on the same time.
Yeah, because they were like, everybody crashed, so it's 8 kilometers to go. Let's make an 8 kilometer rule now.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, the crazy conditions there. But yeah, Merlier wins the sprint ahead of Coy. Gaviria third, Bennett fourth, Valscheid fifth. And so, yeah, tomorrow stage there. So we've got Dev for GC, Arensman, Kwiatkowski, Thomas. So Ineos, a pretty strong team. But tomorrow's a very important day with kind of a fake news climb. It's really 4Ks at 7%, but 1.6Ks of them are at 10%. So a punchy finish. How much time will Kwiatkowski, you know, important race for him, in good shape, obviously, after winning a tour stage? Will he be able to hang there? Almeida's won this race before. It was his first win. First World Tour win was actually at this race. Kämna also here, as well as Igita, who's punchy. I think he's done well before in Tour de Polonia, maybe even won a star. I think he beat Berwick when Berwick attacked in front of Carapaz and destroyed him. Maybe
is that your segue to Berwick?
Oh, yeah. I didn't shout him out yesterday. He won a stage Tour Alsace. Let's go. En planche de Belfi. Ahead of Remco's best mountain domestique next year, William Le Cerf. Ahead of another rider, I think, getting signed, a French guy. 22 minutes into Chris Froome. And Chris Froome said that he was ready to win the Tour de France before the Tour. Nah, Berwick actually did good numbers. Yeah. He did good numbers. Yeah. If you look, he wasn't that far behind Port's time in the planche de Belfi TT. So he leads GC. Tomorrow's a mount stage, but flat finish. So hopefully he can defend that, my boy. All right, that's all from us. Late finish here. Hope you enjoyed it. TT tomorrow, which we'll cover, as well as Tour de Polonia. And thanks for listening as always. Demi Vollering, the queen, is dead.
Jesus
Vollering
Christ.
Now on top. Let's go. All right, thanks all.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.